T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Gresh and Rich Keefe. This is Gresh and Keefe on EEI.
Left my nuts out there on that mound tonight, that's for damn sure.
Another 3-2 pitch, fastball, strike three called on the inside corner. 3-2 innings for Sale.
3-2 pitch, swing and a miss. He got him on a slider. Chris worked him on the inside. The 0-2, swing and a miss at a high fastball. He blew him away. Sale with a big time strikeout in the key spot, his sixth. He fires. Swing and a miss. He got him on a high rider at 98. And Sale does a little dance as he leaves the mound. The Red Sox, signing a threat.
9-1 the final. 9-11-0 for Houston. One run, just three hits.
Well, all the Boston teams, minus the Patriots, were in action last night. And other than the New England Revolution, everyone sucked.
Awful.
It was bad last
night. Parlay just out the door. That sixth inning was just so devastating.
Do you feel defeated today because of the way the Red Sox played?
Yeah, back-to-back games without scoring runs. And you're like, man, this team, like they were all on fire. Maybe the exception of like one or two guys. And now it seems like they're all cold. And obviously you get screwed by an umpire in one game. That stings. And then they made some of their own mistakes, both the manager and, you know, on the field yesterday. But to score one run, and we've been talking so much about how pitchers don't go deep into games, their bullpen sucks. Their starter went eight, and it looked effortless. He was mowing them down, and I think that part is a real killer.
I'm with you on that, and it's deflating because it like if you lost 9-6, it'd be like, okay, you at least scored some runs. Like
the bats were alive. It's three hits.
It's interesting to me. Like when you have bad pitching, it's the whole, okay, you give the other team credit. Maybe there wasn't much you can do. But when your team doesn't hit and they don't score runs, like that's the part where it's like, all right, this is a real kick in the balls here.
Right.
In terms of, you know, this Houston pitching staff, God, we talked about it most of the day yesterday. They were ripe to be plucked. They were hurting. And the Houston starter goes eight innings. This guy, Valdez,
he's
throwing
a perfect game
before.
He was lights out. And so, again, I don't know if it would have mattered because they only scored one run. But I also put a lot of this loss on Alex Cora because they could have kept the game closer. You got five innings, one run from Chris Sale.
Mm-hmm.
Holy smokes. We all would have signed up for that. We were even talking, what did we say before the show ended? Four innings, two runs, I think we would have taken, something like that. Said five innings, one run, and this is after he went just 2 2/3 in game one, and yet he goes out there to start the sixth, immediately walks the leadoff batter, and then with runners on second and third, he lets him pitch to a guy that has already taken him ya-ya ding-dong once and then wall balls. So he was 2-for-2 against Sale. And then shockingly gets another hit, and now it's 3-0. And then you try, and then at that point, you're like, here comes Brazier. He's like, oh, here I come. And then that was a mess. 6-0. You felt like there's no chance they're coming back from that.
No, and that's the deflating part of it. And it gets us into kind of the next layer of that Red Sox discussion that we get into with you at 617-779-7937. And that is, are they about to take us on one last little ride here? Are they at least going to push it to game seven? Maybe do they find a way to win two on the road? I don't feel very confident about that. However,
I don't know this team,
right? They're constantly just changing it up on us.
I think it's possible, and it would almost be apropos of this team to sort of take a lead, kind of almost, you know, we're looking like, oh, who are they going to play in the World Series? And then all of a sudden that's ripped away, and you're like, oh my God, they're going to get bounced out in game six, to then them to turn around one more time and win two in Houston. Because, again, what we were saying about the Astros is still true. Their pitching is a mess.
Mm-hmm.
Valdez had the game of his life last night, so, okay, tip your hat to him. But Lance McCullers can't rejoin the team this series. And everybody else, It's going to be a massive bullpen game. They haven't even announced their starter for game six.
Which is just amazing to
me. So they have a clinch, like, closeout game. So it's one of those, it might be a, oh, we're going to throw everybody. All right, but then if you lose, you're going to have to do the same thing again in game seven. And the Red Sox are starting their best guy. And I know when he came on in relief, it didn't go the way you wanted it to. I think Laz Diaz has something to do with that. But they're going with Nathan Eovaldi, or the Red Sox are going with Nathan Eovaldi. The Astros are going with who knows. Probably Garcia, but who even knows? That's going to be a full bullpen game. And if the Red Sox can't score runs against a full bullpen, then they don't deserve to move on.
That's really the main point here, and I'm with you, is that, look, if you go down 11-10, it's almost like, okay, I can live with that because right. They scored enough to be in the game. Whereas last night for the final three innings, you felt helpless and that they couldn't string together, whether it's walks, at-bats, you know, hella hit batsmen, something, right? They just couldn't get anything going offensively. And I think that's a different feeling of helplessness in mm-hmm. terms of trying to beat another team where it doesn't matter what the pitcher does. We lived through part of that in the Pedro era. Like, I'm sure Marloni wakes up with cold sweats at times,
yep.
Going back to some of the days where it was like, all right, Pete, here's your one run. Go say, you know, mm-hmm. It's all up to you now in terms of get us to the seventh inning and then maybe we can figure it out from there. But if you can't score, it just feels like you can't win. And even last night, that 1-0 game, you felt it was tenuous at best because you don't completely trust Chris Sale anywhere near as much as Alex Cora apparently does.
Now, I also wonder, had they taken the lead in the bottom of the fifth, would Sale have come back out for the sixth? Like, I wonder if it was just, all right, we haven't scored a run yet for him. Let's just keep him out there and try to extend the start. They took Chris Sale out real early in game one, and one of the reasons he started game one was because the bullpen was rested. And then Nick Pivetta was dealing, but it was five innings. You don't want to see him go through a third time through, so you took him out. And then just no consistency there. And you're like, all right, Sale, you can do it. And then as soon as you walked Altuve, it just kind of felt like, all right, we're kind of in for it now. And then he stayed in way too long, and then Brazier was terrible. And then at that point, the game felt lost. But the one maybe positive is, if this team is capable of scoring 21 runs in one two-game sample and then three in another two, who's to say they can't come back out and score 12 to 15
there
runs
you go.
In the next
that's,
two?
Like, that's the number it? I had in my head is can like, they score 12?
Can't they?
Right.
I think so.
And not 11 in one game and one in right. another. Like, can you...
Can somebody, like, who's... some? I don't know. Like, you're hoping that they're still in them. They are very reliant on the home run. I know Fleming said yesterday, he's like, oh, I wouldn't be too worried about that. According to my math, which is subpar.
We're not a math show here, Gresham Keefe.
I think they've scored 28 runs in the series. 23 of them were scored off of home runs.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, I think they've had 11 home runs, and then you had three grand slams, so that adds up quickly. But it's not like they're scoring runs in any other ways right now.
I know we have Michael Irvin joining us at 1:30. Make the appointment. We'll talk to the playmakers. So I know that sort of bumps some of what we would do in 3T. We have a texter who from the 978 who says, Dahlbeck needs to go back to first, Schwarber to left, Verdugo to right. So I guess that brings up the... You can't overhaul the lineup, but I know there were minor tweaks last night. Like,
Kike
led off, and I think JD moved up to fifth from either sixth or seventh, wherever he was hitting sixth, I think.
Oh, Martinez, you mean? Yeah,
JD Martinez. Fifth, yep. Because if you're gonna shake it up and you're gonna go to the point where you're gonna put Dahlbeck into first base, then you probably have to reorganize the order, don't you?
Yeah, a little bit, but I don't hate that because Renfro's been awful. Renfro is just colder than cold, and he's hitting into multiple double plays, and he's not that great in the field either.
Right.
So if you put Schwarber in left, he's not a great left fielder, but now your right fielder it might be a little bit better with Verdugo. Your first base is better. We just saw a first base error yesterday.
There's that
so
too.
So like to the texter's point, you improve your infield defense a little bit. I'm not opposed to it, although I think Cora said, now he has the right to change his mind, I think he said no lineup changes for game six. But again, you think about it. Maybe Hein Bloom's like, actually, there are going to be.
Well, isn't it? I wonder how he can say that only from the standpoint of you don't know who the starting pitcher is going to be.
True.
So if there is a matchup for someone that you want to get in there, and I get the, you know, right, left, right, left, right, left. Okay, fine. But if there's not that maybe necessarily Dahlbeck is going to have a great matchup against a, you know, two inning starter but you would think it's something that you would have to take into account. It's very interesting to hear the manager say that after the game in an absolute statement when the data matters. Yeah. Obviously, with every organization, as we, you know, talked about the whole Chris Sale conundrum is why'd you let him go back through the order of third time?
I still don't get that one.
I don't either.
Because
that's supposed to be the hard and fast one that they really go by, or the teams go by.
Yeah, because it feels like that was more of a feel and less of a stat base, but then letting him face Alvarez was the, well, lefty on lefty, even though he'd already smacked him around the first two plate appearances. So that one, if you're just doing all gut feel, then he's not pitching him there. You walk the bases loaded, you at least pitch to Correa. Game is still 1-0 at that point, and who knows what happens. You go to the bullpen.
I mean, he was throwing the ball great. There was some weak contact throughout the night. He was on command. You know, the walk put us in bad place, but then we didn't make a play. Then Bregman hits a comebacker to the pitcher, and then Alvarez hits a hit. You know, sometimes we get caught up too much on third time through the order, you know, and he was throwing the ball great. The stuff was really good. He was throwing 97 with a good slider. I understand, you know, how people think, but there were two lefties coming up, too, in that pocket, right? Brantley, who he did an amazing job early on, and we had Alvarez. Still, he is who he is, but he's Chris Sale. He's a lefty, and, you know, he's made a living getting lefties out. You got to tip your hat to the kid, you know, to the guy. You know, he didn't try to do too much on that first pitch with man second and third, and he goes the other way. But now I wasn't even, you know, I was getting ready for the guy next to after Alvarez. We went there, and they, you know, put the ball in play. We didn't make plays, and that happened.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of words, but he screwed that up. And now, it's like, there's just no consistency. So do we care about third time through, or do you care about third time through for your pitcher?
Right.
For Nick Pivetta, you cared very much about it. And we were both like, okay, fine. That's what you're doing. You're getting a little greedy with some of these guys. If they go five innings nowadays, that's the most you're going to get. And that also includes Chris Sale. Like, I don't think Cora, I think he's still, he's like, oh, he's made a career out of getting lefties out. All right, this ain't 2017 Chris Sale. If it was, you might have a better argument, but it isn't. This isn't Cy Young runner-up Chris Sale. It hasn't been. And yet he treats him that way. He's the game one starter, mistake. You put him out for the sixth, mistake. You let him pitch against Alvarez, mistake. So it's a trio of mistakes for Cora, all centered around Chris Sale.
And I can't even blame Sale for a lot of what went down last night. Like, if they take Sale out through five innings, we're thinking, oh, my God, he had a Herculean performance because the team was in it in a 1-0 game through five innings. It would have been like, what the hell did that come from?
But also they got this left-handed pocket coming up. What? They go every other. He started the inning. So if it was three up, three down, right, best case scenario.
Okay.
He would have faced two righties and one lefty. So what he's talking about is not. So you go out there to start the inning, Jose Altuve, little guy, little righty. Then you have Brantley, and then you have Bregman. It's another righty.
Yep.
And then you have Alvarez, who I understand he's a lefty, but how could we not discount the fact that he had two great at bats, including a long Johnson against them.
Yeah, and look, the Red Sox might have lost the game anyway because they didn't score any runs,
correct,
right? So I'm sure there are going to be some people who are just going to, you know, in Alex, we trust. And there are times where we even fall into that category too, I think.
Better than not. But
absolutely.
When he screws up, we need to call him out
on
it.
If it were any pitcher other than Chris Sale, I do wonder if we would really have been analyzing it the way we have today, because our confidence in Sale, and I mean, and I'm speaking for the royal us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't think there were
low.
Right there, but a real pie eye in the sky Red Sox fan where you were like, yeah, I got good confidence going into game five with Chris Sale. No,
right.
We were all hoping if he gets through five that it really would be an achievement, and it was, and it would have been. But at the end of the day, the Red Sox haven't scored enough. And look, they can get a great pitching performance, and the Astros can, you know, bring in Yev Kassem, whomever, right? Mm-hmm. They can bring in the soup Nazi to be the opener for their bullpen game. If the Red Sox are going to score one run, they're pork. They ain't winning anyway.
No, that's true.
Let's go to Paul in Plymouth, who wants to talk about the Red Sox winning in Houston. Go ahead, Paul.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I think that the regression in the hitting was coming. I mean, you hit how many home runs and you face a guy who throws ground balls. It was bound to happen, but I think also it's going to happen to Houston in Game 6. I think Evaldi's going to do to them what Valdez did to us. And then Game 7's a slow-pitch softball game. I mean, you hit in Game 7, you win. I just don't see the need for panic. And Sale was getting stronger. He threw 98 by Tucker. And I think that's what Cora saw. And
I'm not going to discount the fact that, and thank you, friend, that that Sale was ripping it on the radar gun. There's no question.
Yeah, but still.
But isn't there also the A, that third time around in the lineup, which again, we've been drilled into our head that that's a real thing.
Yeah.
And if you get Sale out of there after 5, he feels good. Cora feels good.
Yep.
The team feels good about him.
It's 1-0 at that point.
And if you have to go back to him for that inning in a game 7,
yeah,
or even in a game 6,
right,
you're not scoffing as much over it versus the way it kind of ended there with Sale. And it would have made none of us would have thought twice if Alex Cora takes Chris Sale out after 5 innings.
No, you're actually anticipating it.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, awesome job. 5 innings. Great. You're done. You did your job. I know you left with the team was trailing, but still 1-0. Now it's on the offense. The pressure's on the offense. But they mismanaged that. And then the next thing you know, it's 6-0. And the way the bats were going, I felt like 106-0.
It
so
did.
I like the caller's point, though, about the formula to win. If Evaldi can have a great start and kind of hold down the Houston offense, and then knowing that you're just going to have to score a ton of runs, it's going to be bad pitchers versus bad pitchers, tired pitchers in Game 7, and just kind of outslug them.
I hope they have that problem. Yeah. I really do.
No, I know.
I hope they have the problem of getting ready and trying to figure out how to win a Game 7. As we mentioned, Michael Irvin will be with us at 1:30. But, of course, we also said the Boston parlay didn't go so well last night. The Red Sox lost. So did the Bruins.
Line.
I said, oh, so did the Bruins. Oh, it's gone. So it went into the ether. We must have.
What, the highlight reel?
Yeah, apparently
the
so. Reel? Yes, the, right. The Bruins.
Well, 3-3 in the third period, and then the wheels just fell off, and they lose to the Flyers. 6-3, they ruin Shime's Boston parlay and everybody else's Boston parlay.
Gotcha.
Now, nobody really helped out the Boston parlay.
No one did, right.
But that one was frustrating, and Swayman did not have a great game. Not all his fault. Again, we talked to Ray Kroft about it. It wasn't all his fault, but
it was giving up that goal early in the third period. That was the one where they come out right away, and it's boom, 4-3. Mm. And then you felt like they were kind of chasing their tail after that, meaning the Bruins, in trying to just catch up to Philadelphia. But again, the Bees are 1-1,
mm-hmm.
and in Buffalo tomorrow, where it is the regular season debut of Linus. Linus Allmark.
Against his old squad.
Oh, it's revenge game, isn't
they're good
it?
They're good somehow.
Who
Buffalo.
Buffalo?
Yeah, Buffalo.
Are they 1-0?
They're 3-0.
3-0?
Yeah.
But it's game 3 of 82. So.
Yeah.
Oh, is that right, Shime? I thought they were going to wrap it up after this weekend.
Well, you don't know with these changing seasons anymore.
You never know.
Who knows?
That's right. It could be
a 70-game season.
But
they could all go to Canada. Who the hell knows?
I think it is going to be pretty fascinating because we don't know who's going to start more games in net. We know Swayman got the first two. Olmark got a pretty good contract and has more NHL experience. And I think it's going to be sort of a who's playing better type of thing throughout the year. Like Olmark will probably get two, maybe go back to Swayman. But at some point, and I thought it was interesting talking to Ray Kroft about it because he dealt with it his rookie year, which he was rookie of the year, by the way, was that, you know, once you get into the season, you have a marquee game against a really good team. Who starts that game is a pretty good indication of who they feel the most confident in.
I still think it's going to be Swayman that's going to get the majority of the starts this year.
I hope so.
Here is Bruce Cassidy after the game on the Swayman.
Yeah, he's not going to be perfect every night, and clearly he wasn't tonight. Not his best. We needed some saves there when we broke down. That's it. Like, it didn't give us when we needed them. Our breakdowns were bad in front of him. Wasn't a lot of quantity, but high quality. Just mistakes from the back end. It's losing hockey, Steve, is what it is. It's how you lose games. You do dumb things, and they good teams come back at you, and they finish, and that's what happened.
Can I give you a little nugget on the TNT presentation
of
hockey?
Think?
I love it.
You love it.
I'll tell you why.
Okay.
And Shime, right. I see Shime agreeing with me because I think we're going to agree on the same thing. They do a good job with their graphics and getting in gambling. So if you watched the game last night, right? There's the camera that is nearest the boards in terms of the camera angle, right?
Yeah.
When that puck would go up those boards closest to the camera, that's when TNT would do a pop out on the top of the screen connected to the score bug of here's who's on the ice. So it didn't get in the way of any of the action.
Yeah, no.
It didn't get in the way of the stuff you wanted to see. And they like wiped that back. And then probably 30 seconds later, yeah, I caught it like second period where it was some second period stats and some possible bets that you could make through DraftKings.
Not bad.
But Shimey, like I'm sure you caught that, but it was the way they did it, right? There were like commercials during the in-between periods.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But during the game,
pretty good.
TNT did as good a job as any network of seamlessly working in the gambling content.
The graphics were like simple and clean.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, like you'll bounce back from a break and Liam McHugh is like, oh yeah, David Pastrnak plus 1,200 right now. Win the Hart Trophy.
It's great.
And then it's just quick and they get right into it. And
yep.
It's awesome.
Well, I love the NBA on TNT, and it's not just because of the cast of characters. Like, I also think the presentation is really good.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like a little bit crisper even than ESPN or ABC, which I guess is the same thing. I like it there. So if they're going to take all that stuff and apply it to the NHL,
pretty much what
seems
they
like
did.
They are.
Yeah, there's a lot of that, and I know like for the NBA, the score bug is kind of down below, whereas with hockey they moved it up to keep it out of the play on the ice. It was really well done. TNT is getting more right than wrong, and it you know when you hear these rumblings that ESPN might get the Disney, ABC might sell ESPN because apparently they might be a little wonky in terms of the gambling stuff and the
Fox has been hitting you over the head with gambling for the ALCS.
Well, there's a Fox bet. If you could go to the Disney bet app, I'm sure ESPN. But that's the thing is that they don't want to do it, which means it's the time to go sell ESPN. If you're thinking of that as an entity, and I know that we can get into some of the business and the mind numbing schlock that people be like, really?
Yeah.
But this would be the time to do it because of gambling and pumping in all that money. But it just feels like Turner has been like, screw it, we're in. And they just jumped right into it last night with the hockey presentation.
Yeah.
You get a little bit of it with the NBA. But on the whole, ESPN seems to be the network that is almost like uncomfortable in talking about gambling or incorporating it into their broadcast.
I don't know why. It's not just the future. It's the present. So you might as well get in on it.
Maybe if there is a World Series here that we can do on 850, an alternate gambling-only broadcast, how amazing would that be?
It'd be great.
People wouldn't listen to us call the game.
No.
It would just be like, oh.
Every guy who's up, just what his odds are to hit a ding.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Throw Maloney with us.
Uh-huh. Here's the BetQL alternate broadcast with Gresh Keefe and Maloney.
I mean, why not? As Gary Tangway once said, why not? we will get to the Patriots coming up and the Deshaun Watson rumors that are out there as well. Right now, no rumor. Shime's here. He's ready to trade.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Online or over the air, we don't care.
I have a crippling fear of snakes.
Just make us your new midday habit. Gresh and Keefe. WEEI.
So Johnny said that your record is 2-4, but he doesn't feel like you guys are a 2-4 team. What do you feel about where your team is at despite the...
Yeah, well, we're getting ready for the Jets here, so let's try to focus on what we can do. You're ready to go this week, and I'll go out there and play good football again.
All right, that's not what we're talking about in terms of Bill Belichick. That's just Bill Belichick being Bill Belichick
Classic.
And telling you that, you know, 2-4 and got to go play a Jets team, or actually welcome in a Jets team coming off a bye. 12:31, Gresh and Keefe here with WEEI Sports Radio Network. Make sure you're following us on Twitter. @GreshKeefe is growing every day. Be among the thousands who have already started following us on Twitter on the show account at Gresh Keefe. You can get Keefe at Keefe21 and me at The Real Gresh, G-R-E-S-H. So our very own Ryan Hannibal here at WEEI.com. Basically, he's the guy that Rob Bradford keeps locked in a basement and just has him continually working all the time, posting.
Pat's News.
Yeah.
What do you got?
Pat's News. Well, it's not Pat's News, okay. But Hannibal had a nugget about the usage of the Patriots tight ends.
Oh, that sounds like Pat's News.
And basically, it is Jonnu Smith blocker and Hunter Henry is the guy out there catching. So here it is from Hannibal. Okay. At Ryan Hannibal on Twitter, with throw him some little love there. Hunter Henry, 161 snaps running passing routes, 78 snaps as a run blocker.
Okay, so about half.
Jonnu Smith, 84 snaps running passing routes, 118 snaps as a run blocker, and he did get that from Pro Football Focus.
Got it.
Honestly, not off from what I kind of thought it was going to be, whereas to me, Henry was the move or split tight end that you put out in the slot, and Jonnu Smith was going to be the guy who put his hand down a lot of times.
See, I wasn't sure with Jonnu Smith because the Titans would line him up in the backfield at times, and Belichick talked about how he was so elite run after catch. I don't think of him as a great blocker, and I'm not saying he's, you know, Ryan Izzo, Matt Lacoste. Like, again, the baseline has risen from last year's tight end spot.
Who's Devin Asiasi, please?
Healthy scratch once each and every week. But I thought Smith would be a little bit more involved in the offense, and it seems like they're more comfortable having him block, whereas Henry, very clearly, you know, he's running routes twice as often as he's staying in blocking. So, that part's not smart. I thought they were both going to be pass-catching guys.
Right.
That's what I thought.
I think that we haven't seen all of the situations in which they could get Jonnu Smith open. And I go back to, there's nobody on the outside you have to worry about. If you're game planning against the New England Patriots, The first two guys you're looking to stop are Henry and Smith. And then if the other guys beat you,
fine. You think Smith even gets that respect anymore?
I do.
Okay.
Because if you forget about him, that's when he burns you. You've got to make sure that you got him accounted for. Well, it's interesting you say that because yesterday Bill Belichick was asked about, hey, getting Jonnu Smith more in the offense. And in typical Hoodsworth way, he had a great answer.
Well, again, you know, we've talked about this multiple times, like, it's not just like throwing the ball at one guy in a passing game unless it's a screen pass. So throw the ball. We need to have good team execution, protection, route running, spacing, and zones, and, you know, winning our individual matchups based on leverage and man-to-man coverage. And then the quarterback throws the ball to the guy that's open. So concept of, like, just throwing one guy 10 passes, like, I don't really understand that.
Okay.
Not just rubes like you.
Okay, I don't know if anybody's saying they should just drop back and throw to Smith 10 times, but I think his level of production, which currently has been 16 catches in 6 games, is a little low. There's a little light.
All right, so two things at work here, maybe. Let me present to you. Number one would be, as I mentioned, the wide receivers on the outside, but also, isn't Jonnu Smith really the guy that benefits from a consistent running game in terms of getting him open in play action? And if games like Tampa, where you know you can't run the ball, and if you're executing a play fake, even, you know, the linebackers are like, what are you doing? Right, are you trying to fool me here?
I'm not taking the
bait. Right? Yeah. So how much is the inconsistency of the run game combined with not having that one guy on the outside you got to worry about a little bit?
But that might be
Jonnu Smith more than Hunter Henry.
But that might be part of the problem, where I thought Jonnu Smith individually was a better player, and you could very well be right, where the receivers and the running backs in the running game all play a factor. They need to raise him up rather than the other way around.
Yes.
I was sort of under the impression that these two tight ends would come in here and go back to what they wanted to run with the offense when they had, whether Gronk and Hernandez, but even Gronk and Bennett, like, was a very successful duo. And then Gronk gets hurt, right? And then you had Bennett, and you're like, all right, fine. These are catches and yards the first 6 games for Jonnu Smith. 5 for 42, 4 for 28, 1 for 4, 3 for 14 and a touchdown, 2 for 27 and 1 for 9. Like, that, there's just no production there. It is. I never thought it would be this low.
I didn't either. But I'm just, you know, we're in such a weird spot right now where we're trying to evaluate this offense differently than we ever have and trying to figure out, is it though? Again, if there's one thing I know it isn't, it's not the quarterback. The quarterback has the ability to run what they want. It's more about the functionality of the rest of the offense. And I don't even think it's so much tied into the offensive line. I'm just now convinced more and more the one guy on the outside that draws coverage would make all the difference in the world in this offense. Whereas with Tom Brady, I do think there were times where Brady could put somebody in motion where he knew he was going to get a matchup. And he also had people out there that he knew he could trust. Like, I know for me on TV 2 weeks ago, I pointed out Jacoby Myers, 3rd and 9, don't run an 8-yard route. This past week, 3rd and 8, runs a 9-yard route. They end up with a bad spot. Belichick doesn't challenge it. We know what happens, led to the block punt and all that.
Yeah.
So there are guys that are getting better within the offense. But again, if I said to you, Rich Keefe, you're the defensive coordinator of the New York Jets, first of all, congratulations. You're going to get free money soon.
A little over my head here. But,
you know, which wide receiver do you look at and say, ooh, I'm shaking in my boots?
Not a single one.
Right.
I guess you have to watch out for maybe a big play from Bourne. Maybe. Like, there was a breakdown on defense last week, which led to one.
Watch out for the slant.
Yeah, I was going to say. And then, you know, Myers is going to have 8 yards to catch. He might come up with a first down. And it's probably just Harris, right? Because at least Damian Harris is at a couple of games. You're like, all right, just take him down, limit the running game, and then force the rookie quarterback to have to make plays with these guys who all seem to be like just slightly miscast. Like, you talk about the one guy that kind of slots everybody in the right spot.
Mm-hmm.
They're all playing up one right now. And I don't know, it's been pretty mixed results so far with that lineup.
Now, Kendrick Bourne looks like a guy who is growing within this offense. And it's not just, you know, Mac hit him on a play, safety overran it, and he ran for a touchdown. You could see that Bourne, he's settling in. And I think with Jacoby Myers, he is the solid third wide receiver who at this point, with now this quarterback, not dealing with Cam from last year, that you could see him developing as well. But you need that one
stud. If they had
stud.
Steph Diggs instead of Nelson Aguilar, I think the offense looks a whole
lot
different.
Jamar Chase.
Or one of those guys.
One of those youngs in there, a Justin Jefferson, somebody like that.
But that's where I think it also then pivots to Josh McDaniels, because you're like, all right, well, this is the group. We all want somebody better. We don't have somebody better. Yeah, you're gonna have to figure it out how to get the most out of these guys.
Make sure you're following us on Twitter at Gresh Keefe. Could the Miami Dolphins be on the verge of trading for Deshaun Watson? We talked about it in hour one with Ian Rappaport, but this is the first time that it really feels like there is some steam to making an actual trade. Now, Twitter, for what it's worth, it's only 20% of the people in the world that are on Twitter. I understand that. But you and I and Wiggy on NFL Sunday 2 weeks ago, when the Patriots played the Texans, had a big discussion about Deshaun Watson and the perils of getting into business with him. And if you're an owner, how do you position it? Well, as soon as the Deshaun Watson stuff started, there came the tweets and there came the reaction of is Stephen Ross really going to sit there at a press conference and justify bringing in this player? Even Ian Rappaport said it's incredibly complicated, but if you're the Texans, man, you got to get while the getting is good. Maybe this is as good as it's going to get. Right now, we're a little more than two weeks in front of that trade deadline. What's your vibe? What are you thinking on Watson? Is this really going to happen?
Yeah, my vibe would be it's either going to happen at the end of the season, or if it does happen between, so the trade deadline is November 2nd, so we're under 2 weeks
away. Okay, so we're under 2 weeks.
We're under 2 weeks
away. I thought it was the 6th for some reason.
I think it's the 2nd. It's a Tuesday. Then I think it would be the Dolphins, and it's because they are off to such a bad start, and they have all those draft picks. And they are 1-5. You mentioned the loss to Jacksonville. There was rumblings that the owner was already ready for this move. So you didn't have to convince the owner. Or in some cases, it's like, this isn't a great guy, but he's a great player. Like, owner, what do you think? No, it's the owner, by all accounts, that might have to convince the GM and the coach that this is what we want to do. So if he's already on board, I think as long as the Texans aren't sitting there asking for like 9 first round picks, I feel like that is the most likely. But what we've also heard, and this I dismissed originally, but I actually think it makes a lot of sense now. Let's say they do trade him to Miami. Right now, Miami is 1-5.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say Watson goes, practices for a couple weeks, and then plays the final eight games in the season, and they win four or five of them. Not great, but they got him, and they went. Now that draft pick that you're getting is worse. Or no, actually, they have the Phillies draft pick. But you don't say, so forget Miami. Any of these teams. You have Deshaun Watson play there and scrape together a few wins, a la Garoppolo with San Francisco the year the Patriots traded him. Now you're just hurting your own pick, whereas you wait till the end of the year, you weren't going to play the guy anyway, and now you know exactly what draft picks you're getting for April. That might be the way to do it.
I really do wonder how much of this is going to come down to which owner is going to be willing to sit there and say, yes, I approve this move. Because I think what you bring up is very interesting if that is true and that Stephen Ross, the owner, has to go to the guys that he hired, by the way,
right,
to say, I will support you if it, now there's, look, in high-level business, there's massive distrust anywhere because anybody who is a boss will privately tell you that if it comes down to me versus you, I'm picking me over you. So I'm sure there's got to be a little bit in the back of the head of Brian Flores and crew down there that, boy, even if the owner says go trade for Deshaun Watson and this thing blows up, it's going to be my ass that's on the line and the owner ain't going to stick with me. But what a level of comfort if you do want to go make that move. Because in Philly, it does, like, they would have the better compensation. Hell, they got that Miami first-round pick that they can dangle. So it's, hey, if you trade Watson to us, Houston, Miami might stink. You may end up getting falling into a top three pick here, let alone outside of the one you already own. But is Jeffrey Lurie in Philly willing to sit there and say, I know what this guy did, and I don't like it, but he's going to help us win games.
I don't think you can rule anything out in Philly based on their QB shuffle over the last 5 years. Well, so they could maybe do that, too.
Repair. My God, yeah.
Just
who
all
would be the other team, though, that would be in it?
Well, because Miami and Philly, Carolina.
Yeah, Carolina makes kind of sense.
Denver?
God. That's a tough one. No, I don't disagree.
Carolina, Denver, Miami, Philly. So if they're dead set on getting him out of the conference, which I don't know if that's really something that you would want to do, Philly makes sense.
Can I throw a little monkey wrench into the Denver thing quickly?
Yeah.
Is that ownership situation settled out there? Because I thought it was going to one of the Bolin daughters. And I just wonder if there is
Their first move is here's Deshaun Watson. Probably not.
Wonder if that could be tough. But anyway, at least it's on the radar.
Yeah.
And maybe it happens. And if Deshaun Watson goes to Miami, look out.
Yeah.
The AFC East changes for the next half decade.
Deshaun Watson and Josh Allen, both in the same division.
And Mac
roughly
Jones.
The same age. Right. And Zach Wilson.
And Zach Wilson. There you go. We'll get to slow burn. Let's slow it down and have some fun next.
Back to the guys, Gresh and Keith on WEEI. Did the show move too fast for you today?
I was invited to sing at Joe Jonas's wedding.
And let's slow it down.
You can catch all the ALCS action you want.
See what I did to Sean?
Welcome to this week's Gresh and Keith Slow Burn.
Slow Burn brought to you by Brennan's Smoke Shop. Brennan's has 9 locations in Massachusetts and just opened their newest shop in Hudson, New Hampshire, right over the border. Visit Brennan's for the best selection of cigars. Hello, Jeff Brennan. Keith, what do we have?
All right, got a couple things for you here this week. Let's start out with an age-old question. Is Chris Scheim ticklish?
Scheim, are you ticklish?
Yeah, I'd say a little bit.
Only one way to find out. Get over here, you silly goose. It took Sean that long to get in. There you go.
Sean came over and then we figured it out, yeah.
Sean, what spot on you is the most ticklish?
I'd say probably the bottom of my feet. Say a little bit.
Only one way to find out. I'm not touching that, though.
All right, we'll just leave it right there. Scheim, as you know, famously does the trendings.
What do you think Scheim's feet look like? Sorry.
Probably nice, good-looking normal feet.
Grooms. Yeah, right.
Mushrooms.
Hooves.
Tortellini in between the
tortellini.
Toes.
Tortellini. Come on. A different kind of cheese.
Sure, he has clean feet.
You think
feet.
I'd leave tortellini down there? You
no.
guys are
no,
out
he's
of your
got nice
Scheim
feet.
Leaves no tortellini uneaten.
Well, you have a dog. If any of it fell, your dog would scoop it up before
exactly.
you. Picking up everything. Put it between his toes.
Here, of course, one of the parts of doing the trending reads also includes some of the great sponsors that we have here.
Yes.
And here is Chris Scheim talking about Shaw's.
Trending now, brought to you by Shaw's. Get ready for the game with a trip to Shaw's. You'll tackle your hungry team with Shaw's party platters. Pick up sandwich platters, wing platters, shrimp platters, veggie platters. Shaw's can help you score a touchdown with all your fans.
I am shocked that he didn't get up midway through the read and go up the street to Shaw's.
I would love a shrimp platter right
now. Oh, my
now.
God. They all sound great.
Delicious.
Shrimp platter.
Yeah.
They all sound great.
Shrimp and cocktail sauce?
12:53
oh, yeah.
in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. Isn't that more like a evening drink sort
it's
of
a perfect hors d'oeuvre.
Appetizer
it's an anytime
order.
Snack.
It's an anytime.
It's an anytime snack. Well, we also learned that one of the Houston Astros celebrity fans is none other than Ted Cruz.
He is.
And you had some thoughts about Ted Cruz, as of course there was some photos of him in Houston going around, very much with a tucked in shirt to root on his team.
When you have a fupu, you can't tuck like that. You just can't. I mean, it looks, the guy looks like he has his ass on backwards.
It's like a Mr. Potato Head.
Yes! He's around. When that guy tucks, it looks like his ass is on backwards.
Swiping the front, zipping the back. That's right. Pretty good. Ted Cruz. So will he be there game six, you think, tomorrow night?
Oh, no. Are you kidding me?
Astro super fan.
Too many of the flashies will be there.
Oh, that's
Mattress
true.
Mac will be there waiting to cash $5 million.
Bet again on them?
Supposedly,
the World
Mattress Mac has enough bets out that if the Astros win the World Series, he will rake in north of $46 million. Thank
absurd.
You, Scheim. Yeah.
He does it every year, doesn't he? Or like when they're good.
Much, yeah.
And they've been good
yeah.
recently. So.
But I don't think this one's tied in. It's not like the no-hit promotion.
No. But it's just
you
his
got
money,
jobbed
his
out of.
Yeah, I did. I got screwed. So much for the third time through that.
That's right. Third time bit you in the butt on that one.
Correct.
So there is your slow burn. Again, brought to you by Brennan's Smoke Shop. Brennan's has 9 locations in Massachusetts just open. Their newest shop in Hudson, New Hampshire. Visit Brennan's for the best selection of cigars. Yeah, the Boston Parlay didn't work out too well last night. Celtics season opener. Bruins lose in Philly. Red Sox are up against it. And we got some Thursday night football to get to tonight as well. And Michael Irvin at 1:30. Don't go anywhere. Final hour, Gresh and Keefe next.